Heard Wednesday, right after the WBAI Evening News on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Now stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up. It is now 7 p.m. Stay tuned.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bond for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, but Billy Bond.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I made it.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Rob T. Firefly is very far away. Why is that? Rob,
I don't know.
A little closer to the microphone, perhaps. Yeah, that's better. That's better. And Gila, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. Yeah. What, you have a new microphone there? Is that it? And it's a nice low-sounding microphone.
Well.
Okay, well, and Alex, haven't forgot about you.
I am here. Good evening, everyone.
Great. Well, I won't lie. You know, it's been quite a week for me. It really has been. This has been probably one of the pivotal moments of my life. It was. How do I say it? It was the week I got verified on Twitter. I am Twitter verified right now. Yeah, and I got to say, first of all, no disrespect to anybody here. I mean, if you see me less, there are other people now that I talk to. That's just life changes. That's how it is. But I got to say, it wasn't an easy path to get there. You know, I've been on Twitter for about 25 years now, and you know, it's hard. It's hard sometimes. And when Twitter reopened their verification process after several years, by the way, I just applied when they closed it off last time. So my application was actually being processed when they decided, okay, no more. Maybe that's what spurred it. I don't know. But when they opened up again a couple of weeks ago, I was among the first to say, okay, here we go, and filled out the forms and all that. And then I got this notice, this computerized notice saying that this account does not meet the criteria to be verified. And I was beside myself. I could not accept it. It was a total denial. This has to be wrong. This can't be happening. This can't be real. I mean, Twitter, no, you've got it wrong. This is a mistake. It's got to be. And you know, I thank everybody for their support, for listening to me. Because after that, I grew to accept the decision. I was basically, yeah. Makes sense. You know, I don't deserve it. I don't deserve to be verified. And then after that, it was interesting to see how it progressed, because after that, I became thankful. I was thankful to Twitter and actually kind of apologetic for even questioning them in the first place, because you can't really question. It's an email. It's a machine, and it has its reasons, and you can't really second guess that. And I feel bad for even having attempted to do that. I just felt like this is the signal I need to improve my life. You know, Yeah, sure. I've been publishing a magazine for, 35 years now. I've been doing this radio show forever. I've made a movie, put out 2 books. And I thought that was enough. You know, I thought that was enough to qualify me as somebody worthy of note. And Twitter, thank you for telling me that it wasn't. And for making me push a little harder. You know, now maybe I'll return Mel Gibson's phone calls and make that hacker Western we've all been wanting to see. You know, maybe I'll put out that rap album. Maybe I'll do something, an addition that I've been holding back on. Because Twitter told me that I could do more. I could make more of myself. And then, maybe then, I'll be verified. And I'll get that little blue check next to my name. And I got to tell you, it was something. It was a lot of soul searching going on this week, realizing that, yeah, I might have accomplished some things, but I haven't accomplished nearly enough, and there's so much more left to go. And this is the signal that I was waiting for. So as of a couple of days ago, I was really, really into just starting over and launching all these projects. And then I discovered that they had changed their minds and decided to verify me after all. And now I've got a blue check next to my name. So I don't really have any motivation to do anything more. I really don't. I'm done. I'm sitting back now. This is my retirement. I have the blue check. I'm verified. There you go. How was your week?
Well, my week was different from yours in that I requested verification from Twitter when they opened it back up, and they said no. So, you know, I'm proud of the work that I do with you and elsewhere, but I'm just not that cool yet. Maybe you can put in a word for me now.
Maybe you should try harder, Rob. Maybe there's more you can do as well. You know, maybe they're telling you that they see more in you than you see in yourself. You know, you might see a blue check next to your name. But that blue check is earned, okay? That blue check comes with pain. And it's not easy to carry. It really is. It comes with a lot of responsibility. It comes with a lot of responsibility. And I may yet regret this. When you say something, people listen. People take you more seriously now. They see the blue check and right away. All right, you must know what he's talking about. And I don't. I really, really don't. But now I have to pretend like I do, and that's going to be a lot of work. Gila.
Well, I just want to caution you because I know people who have had
Hang on. Do you have a blue check next to your name?
I do not.
And you're going to caution me?
All I was going to say.
Let's hear
some press.
This is the kind of thing that they warned me about, all right? Go ahead.
I have known people who had blue checks. And don't have them anymore. So I'm just saying, don't rest on the blue check laurel, because he who giveth the blue check can taketh it away.
7:08 p.m. That's when the threat came in. The threat to my blue check was just made over the air. You got it, right, Kyle?
Yeah, you're going to try some of those.
You're on my side still, right? You better be on my side.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that earlier, right? What I said earlier is what I stand.
Right. Let's try and get on with the show. I'll do the best I can. Sensing a lot of tension here, though, just because I got a little blue check next to my name now.
Oh, look, I think Alex has something to
say. Yeah, Alex, what are you going to say? You going to burst my bubble?
Well, you know, I know you're being facetious on several different levels.
Oh,
here.
You do. You know this. You know me. You know me better than myself. Okay, good to know that, too.
But I want to ask, you know, and this is a serious question, though, because this is something you've complained about for years.
We only talk in serious questions here. Go ahead.
I know. Well, you're a serious man now with this blue check. So
damn
I expect-
right. Don't you forget it.
I haven't, and I'm sure you won't let
all
anybody.
Right,
so, you know, there's no danger of that, right? But no, in all seriousness, though, you've been complaining about this for several years. It's obviously been very important to you. But we rail against the power of these social media platforms constantly on this show. We bemoan the algorithmic policy driven and contents that they constantly feed us, and that being part of this blue check posse now for you means that you're no longer on the side of the little guy here. No longer on the side of the person who is railing against the algorithmic feeds that are constantly driven to us, pushing more and more content from these blue checks.
Should I explain it?
A friend of the algorithm. You're not an enemy of the algorithm. You're part of that algorithm now, Emmanuel.
Okay. Well, first of all, we're all part of the algorithm, all right? Second of all, there is no blue check posse. Whoever told you that is lying and will be punished. And, you know, I think we at least ought to try to get along because I have a lot of powerful friends now, okay? A lot of other blue checks out there. We stand up for each other.
Yes. But you're not answering the question now. I mean, it does. You listed these achievements. You've been doing wonderful work now for the better part of really 4 decades, right? Why was it so important to you to get this blue check verification from Twitter? What, aside from the sarcastic, facetious remarks, though, but what was it that motivated you to really try for this?
First of all,
I felt like you didn't need it.
I'm sensing that someone doesn't have a blue check. Second of all, thank you for complimenting me on my good work for the last 4 decades. I've been on this planet for 6 decades, though, so I'm going to take that as an insult. Doing bad work for 2 decades. Fine. Third of all, you know what? Sometimes you just got to see what's possible. In the world of hackers, you just have to try something to see what happens. And now that I've got my foot in the door, I'm on the other side. I know what goes on in the blue check world. And maybe I can share that information. Maybe I can help those of you on the outside. You ever think of that? Maybe I'm still one of the good guys. I don't have to be evil just because I'm now verified.
True. You know, this is the argument that I've made, countless times, about, working for change from within rather than without. Something I hope to do when I had spent time with the government as well. But look, I think it's laudable. I checked I don't have the option of applying for verification now, but I would like to speak with you further about it offline, about this whole process. And, maybe you can teach us, some of the ways that of blue check verification here.
The blue check envy is strong in this one.
Already trying to endear himself. It's just so
pitiful. You know what, Alex? After the show, we'll have a little a powwow, and maybe we can guide you, or I can guide you. I'm really the only one here that can do this right now.
We'll see. I'm not very active at all on Twitter, I have to say. But I mean, what if? What about Facebook?
Oh God, no. Oh no. I'm sorry, but I have to draw the line somewhere, and yeah. I'm on, as I've mentioned, I'm on Facebook, but I don't actually do anything on Facebook. So people talk to me there, but I'm not hearing it. And, sometimes like once a year I go in and I check all the messages that I missed, and there are some life-changing events I didn't know about that people felt the only place to tell me about it was, an artificial construct on a social media platform. But that's our day and time, I guess. That's how people act.
Well, speaking of Twitter accounts, yours is verified. What about the magazine? What about our radio show?
That's those are good questions. Those are very good questions, which I am not privy to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I see.
I am not privy right now.
Discuss with the posse and then refer to us.
I cannot go into any more detail on... I've already said too much, I think. And I'm sure our listeners will agree. But what I do want to talk about, you mentioned algorithms. And this was an interesting story that I saw... pass over our news group the other day, that Instagram has changed their algorithm after alleged bias concerning the Gaza situation. Yeah. Now, the current system had a bigger impact than expected on some types of posts. It was an unintended side effect rather than an attempt to censor any particular viewpoint, according to Instagram. But during the recent Gaza conflict, social media platforms were heavily used to spread messages of support on both sides. Many pro-Palestinian messages were among those widely reshared, which means they would have received less prominence than original posts under the current system. A company spokeswoman said the logic for prioritizing original posts was that most Instagram users had more stories to follow than time to check them. And the company believed people were more interested in original stories from their closest friends. It's also caused people to believe we were suppressing stories about particular topics or points of view. We want to be really clear, this isn't the case. Of course, that is what Instagram is saying. The change follows a number of weeks in which some users and employees questioned how Facebook, which owns Instagram, handled posts about the Gaza conflict on its own site and on apps it owns, such as Instagram. BuzzFeed News reported on internal strife among the way Palestinian-related content often had warnings attached, while the Financial Times reported that a group of about 50 employees have been involved in raising concerns about supposed suppression of pro-Palestinian content. Many of the issues are believed to have been caused by large-scale automated moderation rather than deliberate attempts by individuals to restrict content. Does that make anybody feel better when it's done by wide-scale automated moderation instead of good old-fashioned humans? Instagram said this newly announced shift towards equal weighting of original posts and reshared stories will happen over time rather than being an instant change. We still think people want to see more original stories, so we're looking at other ways to focus stories on original content through things like new creative tools. And I apologize for if that story seemed a little choppy. When I printed it out, I printed the whole thing, but after it printed out, I realized that Instagram had stuck an ad in the middle of one of the paragraphs, making it impossible to read. So, yeah, but I think you get the gist of it, that these things are going on and that people are reacting to them, and the reaction is causing change.
Sure. You know, interestingly, on that subject, I think I mentioned this last week, but I should have an article, coincidentally, in the Financial Times coming out on algorithmic transparency, probably within the next couple of weeks. But this is also, you know, it's a big problem. Nobody really understands, I think, even within the social media platforms themselves, what the unintended consequences of algorithmic tweaks are, or even really how the entire algorithm that feeds us content actually works. And without having a holistic internal understanding of how these algorithms work, it becomes very difficult to explain to the outside world what they're doing and how they work. And then very difficult to hold these platforms accountable for what they do. You know, and interestingly enough, you mentioned that the Financial Times was concerned about silencing, pro-Palestinian voices. So 2 weeks ago, I published an article about due process and fairness principles on social media platforms in the Financial Times. And if you check out the Financial Times' Twitter page where they promoted this article, all of the comments on the Twitter page have the hashtag Hope to Gaza and are anti-Israeli. As soon as they put this article up on Twitter and promoted it, there were just a flood of comments underneath it that were entirely pro-Palestinian and entirely anti-Israeli and just seemingly coming out of nowhere. I'm looking at one of them right now. They all seem like they're fairly recent accounts, very likely bots. So, yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff going on out there.
Well, I can tell you there are also a lot of people out there, but the point taken that these things can be automated, and we've seen the tactic used before in many different arenas. So why would this be any different? But it's fascinating to watch, to see how the social media networks handle situations like this. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, they all have potential a massive amount of influence in these world situations. Speaking of massive amounts of influence and things like that, we talked about Trump's new blog that debuted a couple of weeks ago. Guess what? It's done already. He's finished with it. Got bored and threw it away. I think it's DonaldJTrump.com. Basically, it just says from the desk of the president or something stupid like that. And it was supposed to be a substitute for Twitter since he was kicked off of Twitter. He can't tweet anymore, obviously. But this would allow you to get his tweets sent to your phone through his website. And it's less than a month ago. According to a senior aide to Trump named Jason Miller, the page will not be returning. And confirmed to CNN, the page had been scrubbed. It was just auxiliary to the broader efforts we have and are working on. Those who attempt to visit the page are now greeted with a web form asking for their contact information for future automated billing endeavors. The blog called From the Desk of Donald J. Trump was launched on May 4th, came months after Trump had been banned from Facebook and Twitter. And at the time, it was billed as a platform by which Trump could speak directly to his supporters. Now, this is kind of interesting and pretty funny. Fox News first reported that Trump had started the blog, dubbed it a new communications platform. I don't know why, but that particular phrase really set him off, and he got extremely angry at them. Trump disputed Fox's framing in a statement. This is meant to be a temporary way of getting my thoughts and ideas out to the public without the fake news spin, but the website is not a platform. And then he took it down. I don't know what prompted that or what the big hullabaloo is about being a platform. Gila, do you have an idea?
I was actually looking at a comparable story, a parallel story, I guess, in the Washington Post. And he's apparently still planning on launching a social media platform and was concerned, I believe, that people were going to assume that this no-frills blog site was the social media platform. And apparently he was frustrated with low readership. So... he 86'd it, but the platform is still coming.
Is alleged. It? Really? Okay, so he's going to launch, you know, NASA announced they're going to launch a couple of probes to Venus. Which one do you think will get there first? I'm betting on Venus.
Venus.
I'm betting on Venus. I'm betting that something will come back from Venus before he gets any new platform launched. Here's an interesting story out of Florida that kind of speaks to our passions. Has to do with hacking, has to do with school districts, and has to do with clueless responses. I'm showing my bias. Well, a St. Petersburg high school junior hacked into the Pinellas County School District's computer network this spring and shut down internet access for all 145 of the district's schools for 2 days. That's a big district. Wow. The 17-year-old was arrested on a felony computer crimes charge and expelled. Wow, they don't kid around down there in Florida. I mean, do whatever you want with guns, but don't mess with our high school computers. The Tampa Bay Times is not naming the kid because of his age, but somehow managed to interview him and his mother. The teen said he had become fixated on the idea of infiltrating the school district's network after seeing an online video showcasing the vulnerability of school networks. That's somehow according to a search warrant. The search warrant talks about the video. I want to see the video. Yeah, it sounds intriguing, and it inspired him to actually try out his school district's computer network. He said he instantly regretted his actions and even tried to undo the hack. By the time it was done, there was no way to undo it. If I could go back, I wouldn't do it again. Okay, question here. What kind of hack can you not undo after, I mean, you've logged in, you have access, you know, unless his first act was to delete everything, which seems kind of hard to believe. Is the system just really poorly designed where if an unauthorized user gets in, there's untold damage that can no longer be repaired? This hack is the latest to show how susceptible networks can be to cyber attacks. Back in February, of course, remember this, it's not really related, but someone tried to poison the city of Oldsmar's water supply, also, I believe, in Florida, by hacking into its network and greatly increasing the amount of lye in the water. An employee noticed the attack and was able to stop it, but experts say it underscored the vulnerability of the nation's infrastructure to cyber attacks. And earlier this month, of course, the Colonial Pipeline, the country's largest gasoline pipeline that runs from Texas to New York, was knocked offline by a cyber attack, leading to gas shortages and dumbasses filling plastic bags with gas all along the East Coast. Tirthankar Ghosh, the associate director of the University of West Florida Center for Cybersecurity, said distributed denial of services attacks like the one on the school system are common. and generally of low sophistication. So a DDoS attack is all this apparently was, at least to get access. In recent years, he said it has become a more popular form of attack, often as a way to distract IT teams while attackers unleash something more sophisticated. The scale of this attack, it really stood out. He said a denial of service attack is pretty common, but the fact that 145 schools, their networks came down, that says something. In general, public universities and schools have less protected networks because they tend to believe in more open connection. Private companies, on the other hand, can lock things down. However, they often don't. Now, for years, Charter Spectrum had, you might be familiar with them, had provided distributed denial of services protection for the very same Pinellas school system. However, and again, those of you who are Spectrum customers might be familiar with this. Spectrum representatives told the district that when the school district migrated to a new system in late 2020, Spectrum failed to maintain the protection. Yeah, Spectrum just didn't keep up. The company has since reactivated the protection and credited the school system with $23,000 for their payment. they paid without getting any protection, which was pretty obvious from the hack. Now, this attack occurred sometime between March 22nd and March 23rd. And after the main disruption, the district contacted Charter Spectrum and figured out that they had no protection and asked that they turn it the hell back on. On March 25th, another attempt was detected and administrators were notified. That was when St. Petersburg police were called. The school district told investigators that the attack was considered critical because statewide testing was occurring. According to St. Petersburg police, they filed to get a search warrant for the teen's phone. The teen said the hack wasn't designed to disrupt state testing. He also said he didn't know how seriously the hack would impact all the schools in the district, including one his little sister attended. When the hack first occurred, they searched for suspicious activity, found a user who looked up the school district's public internet protocol address. That's always the first step. And that, of course, would be needed for the hack. He looked for which router was used. This is how they found the guy. They looked for which router was used to look up the IP for the school district and narrowed it down to students in a specific classroom at that time. Wow. Through that, they traced it to the student's Samsung Galaxy phone. Oh, come on. They have too much information on kids here. The student's school computer account had also accessed the IP search 3 days prior, according to the search warrant. Now, when first interviewed by detectives, the student said he bought a virtual private network from a web developer off the social media platform Discord, and that the developer accessed the school's network. Detectives pushed the boy on inconsistencies in his statement, just like they do on TV, and he admitted he saw an online video about the fragility of school networks and became interested in the idea of infiltrating the network, according to records. He had practiced a similar attack on his home network and a friend's network, which were successful. But when he attempted the attack on the school system, he at first was unsuccessful. On Discord, he found a man who had shared a video of him infiltrating a network. Boy, this sounds evil. The boy said Wednesday that he carried out the attack on the school district by taking direct instructions from that man, though he never met him in person. That attack took about 2 weeks of planning and practice. Now, the police spokeswoman said the man does not appear in their system and has nothing currently initiated against him. The boy's mother said she believes the man he communicated with does not live in the United States, which is so completely irrelevant to any of this. What a story. Most of this comes to us from the Florida newspaper known as TNS, which we got off their website. Tampa Bay Times, actually. What do you guys think as far as the expelling and a felony? I mean, you know, it sounds like this network was not that secure and was not being protected. They were paying for protection they weren't getting. There's that. So, in effect, this kid got them $23,000 of credit in addition to being protected in the future. As for damage, I want to know more details about the damage. Did he intentionally damage something? If so, then that's something. But if he's just messing around, looking for an IP, figuring out how to get access, and that's it, I don't think expelling somebody, ruining their lives, not that expelling somebody ruins their lives, but it does definitely complicate it. Charging someone with a felony, and that won't go away. And you know how difficult it can be in Florida. I don't think it's justified based on what I'm reading. Alex, as a lawyer, what do you think?
Well, you mentioned, I think, a word here that really should be dispositive, I think, in this case, at least in my opinion, and that's intent. And in criminal law, you have to have something called mens rea, or literally it stands for, it's Latin for the mental thing. Rea, or reus in Latin, is the word for thing. So it's the mental element of a particular crime, which is often interpreted as intent under the criminal law in the United States. So you have to have an intention to do something in order to be held culpable for it. Now, based on the facts that you had described, Emmanuel, it seems like there wasn't malintent here. He didn't necessarily intend to cause all of these particular consequences. Now, were these consequences foreseeable? Probably, but they're foreseeable to an adult mm-hmm. who understands these issues and who understands the implications of the technological changes that he may be introducing into that computer systems networks, into that particular school system, or understands what he's doing. Now, on the other hand, however, to be fair, it does seem like there was a fair amount of planning that went into launching this DDoS attack, this distributed denial of service attack on the school district, and planning with some kind of third party. But to my mind, the influence of this third party on an impressionable young 16-year-old should be seen more as a mitigating circumstance rather than an aggravating circumstance, because he does seem contrite. He does have remorse. He does not seem like he legitimately aimed to cause any of this damage. And the damages, as you rightfully mentioned, I think here are probably somewhat spurious. It does not necessarily make sense whatsoever in my mind to ruin this kid's life for simply being curious and poking around on a network. Yet, on yet another hand, I think there should be some consequences, because we do want to, as a matter of policy, discourage people from engaging in reckless behavior when it comes to DDoS attacks that could knock systems offline like this. We don't want to have unintentional consequences cascading, around cyberspace like this.
Having the cops show up, I think that's discouragement enough. And first of all, just to clarify, he's 17, not 16. And as far as evidence that he planned this, what's wrong with planning mischief? I mean, every good act of mischief I've been involved in has taken a lot of planning, sometimes weeks, sometimes months, sometimes most of my life to work up to it. But the point is the intent, as we're both discussing, the intent of this. What his mother says, it wasn't something that was malicious. By all means, it was just something like a video game to him in his head. He was just pushing it to see how smart he could go with it. He's super smart in that aspect. If he can apply it in a positive way, that's what he's going to try and do. He wants to work in security. I think the school district should hire him as a security consultant, because he knows the weaknesses and knows the thinking. And instead of attacking the guy who, from what I've read, has not caused permanent damage to the system and didn't do malicious things, why not build some kind of a relationship from that? And he might be able to guide others from going down the same path. Does anybody agree with me? Rob, go ahead.
There is a great paradox at work here. And many people in the information security world know this. It's kind of common knowledge that school systems are among the worst maintained out there. Like they're usually, the work of tons of lowest bidders, often on aging equipment because no one can afford to put new stuff in. And the administrations of the schools are not always all that interested in, the implications of having bad security. And at the same time, they're bringing in hundreds and thousands of kids with a new crop coming in every year, and kids, each generation of children, like more technically adept than the ones that came before in general, and each one of which would, like, in terms of like being the cool kid in school, like it would be such a badge of honor to crap up your school system in some way for those into that sort of mischief. And so, like, you've got like really clever and inquisitive and imaginative people coming up that are going to take pot shots at your system. That's just going to happen. And when this happens, like, they could be adopting some sort of bug bounty type thing, as a lot of big companies have done, where like people are rewarded for finding and responsibly disclosing security holes. But there's also the fact that kids are kids. They are not adults. They do not have, in most cases, they do not have the adult's understanding of, like, consequences to their actions and stuff. Kids need room to mess up because children are there to learn. They're there to grow. And, you know, eventually they'll be a responsible member of society. But while they're kids, expelling them from school over something like this, charging them with felonies over something like this, that is not the way to go. That's not going to help the kid. That's not going to help the school district. That's not going to help anybody. All it's going to do is screw up a kid's life.
And you know, and again, not to say that just because you don't finish high school, your life is ruined. I'm sure people will pick themselves up and figure out other ways. I know he's going for his GED, but he should be allowed back in, I think. If a kid is the one hacking his own school district, that school district is very lucky. Okay, because anybody in the world could be hacking that system and attaching ransomware to it and doing God knows what else. If you have somebody inside the confines of your own buildings who knows how to do this and is willing to share that information with you, that is a gift. That is a gift, and you should embrace that. I know, you know, you're a system admin. You won't be the happiest person in the world when your entire system is compromised. But your system was compromised before somebody actually attempted to do it because you didn't have sufficient security. Now you know. Now you can do something about it. And now you can gain a very powerful ally. Rob, did you have something
Absolutely.
Else?
Absolutely. And there's also the fact that the system, a school's system, contains data on the kids there. It contains identifiable, like personally relevant data that really could cause huge problems if it got out there. Like, this isn't just trade secrets. This isn't the formula for New Coke or something. This is the you know, personal details of kids. And that is something that needs more protection than, you know, corporate stuff, not less.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, you know, I think Rob is absolutely correct in that these school districts are targets. And not necessarily just of students. There is one particular group that I've been tracking for over 2 years that has targeted a huge swath of critical infrastructure in the economy and several hundred local school districts for credentials harvesting attacks. And I imagine that in a fair number of them, they probably were successful in those particular attacks. And maybe they have persistence inside these networks. And that's why I think, you know, we're going to continue to see more and more ransom events at the local government level and quite likely at a faster clip because of policies with respect to paying the ransom being changed. But back to the original issue here with this particular case, I mean, I think there's so many mitigating circumstances here. I think you've got the kid's age. He's 17. You know, his brain is not fully formed at that particular time. I mean, there's obviously a lack of intent to cause real damage. There's some kind of influence of a third party. And I think critically here, there are missing security controls that used to be there on that particular system. And so, yeah, if anybody's to be blamed for this attack being successful, I could see it being the service provider that was supposed to have been providing the particular controls, some kind of content distribution network that would prevent a DDoS attack of this time. And then you consider the long-term damage, the potential long-term damage to this individual's career and path in life. And even though, like we said, that's not the be-all end-all of life, if you don't finish high school, you can get your GED and move on and be quite successful, but it makes life harder. There's no question about it. All factors in my mind point to a week, maybe 2 weeks of suspension, out of school suspension, slap on the wrist, expulsion, absolutely not. Criminal charges, maybe, but they should probably be dismissed. I think charging him with something and then dismissing it on the condition that he goes and does some community service.
How about free consulting services for the school district?
Do something. Absolutely. But, you know, sure, slap him on the wrist, but don't punish him for the rest of his life. Certainly not. It was a waste of talent.
Kyle, go ahead.
Yeah, I just think that the felony is a bit harsh in this scenario and that the schools probably got, contrary, I think, to what we have been saying, I think they probably have enough resources to have implemented like some kind of reverse proxy system or something that would be able to handle an attack, even a large attack. Because, as we know, I mean, schools are such hostile places with, as Rob was talking about, so many different people, such high traffic and dynamic environment that they should be anticipating it, I think, a little bit more than throwing all of it onto a student who's kind of exploring and showing them where they need to do work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A learning experience here on so many levels, and I wish everyone would just see it that way instead of just acting, you know, we're all acting like cops with no sense of humor, and that's no way to live. Okay, we have an email address here at Off the Hook, oth@2600.com. People use it every day to write to us send us their feelings, their thoughts. We're going to read a couple of letters, if that's okay with everybody. This letter comes from Ashish. He asks, is there a way to turn down or off someone else's stereo? Huh. Well, it's an unusual question. I don't quite know how to answer that. Well, yeah, of course, you could just go and turn it off. I imagine you've already tried that. And, of course, asking them to turn it off. This sounds like somebody who's bothered by a loud stereo. You know, maybe somebody can help me with this. I'm sorry, Ashish, to take over. But I've been curious about something that's completely unrelated. When I was a kid, I remember I could hear a radio in a neighboring house. And if I had a radio, too, let's say there were two FM radios, if I tuned the FM dial to a different frequency, let's say they were on 106, I would tune it to like 93 or 94 or something like that. And if I tuned it just right, their signal would go silent. It was some kind of harmonic. I don't exactly know how it worked, but I swear it worked. And I was able to use this many, many times to just turn off someone's radio and confuse the hell out of them. And it was a lot of fun. These days I'd be charged with a felony, but it was fun back then.
Well, I think this style of a phenomena is a sort of a jammer, and because they're receiving on their radio, mm-hmm. you could theoretically transmit a noise or white noise or static of some kind, or just silence at that frequency at a higher power level. That's a really simplistic way to put it, but technically, yeah, I mean, you could alter what they're receiving if it is a receiver.
The odds of them receiving a radio station, I mean, no offense, because we're all doing radio right now, but a lot of people don't listen to radio. They listen to, you know, iPhones
Think of the other ways they might be connecting to that. Okay, so maybe it's not FM. Maybe it's a Bluetooth connection of some kind.
Mm-hmm. You find other ways
from a phone Wi-Fi.
I assume this is somebody that you know. So you find other ways to mess with them. So you know, if you know their phone number and they're playing music loud, you call their phone. They have to turn the music down to answer the phone. Then you hang up. Of course, you block your number, and then they turn the music up, and you just keep doing this, and eventually they're going to throw something out the window. So at least you'll have a little bit of fun. Go ahead, Alex.
Sure. I mean, one possibility would be to somehow, you know, pair your phone to their device, right?
Oh,
to
yeah.
Access it. If you had physical access to the device, you might be able to do that.
You scan Bluetooth, though. You can find something that way and then use all sorts of other ways to get more information about them. I did that once in a coffee shop. I saw somebody next to me, was able to find their hotspot. From there, I was able to somehow get access to their list of music, and it got really scary really fast how much I was able to do and learn about them.
Oh, I bet. I'm sure their music taste was subpar.
It was awful.
Well.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
You could also write a note.
You could write a note, but that's so 1950s.
It's very direct.
Mm. Go ahead, Alex.
Good. Another way of doing this very easily, it's been suggested actually by a colleague of mine who's happening to be listening to this show, would be simply to just kill the power to the device. Maybe the whole building. Just shut it down.
Doesn't that affect you as well?
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe you're prepared for this. Maybe.
And plus, if it's somebody's phone, which I suspect it probably is, they've got battery power, so it'll last a long time.
Yeah, and I don't know. If you tried to do that at a distance, you might you might have an unexpected result and then cause some sort of short, and an appliance that otherwise was working might get overheated, and you know, you could have some cascading problems.
Send us more information on this, because we want to make it our mission to figure out how to turn that stereo off, and we'll resort to any means to like learn more about it and just try creative solutions. It's just an exercise.
Electromagnetic pulse might do.
I wonder what they're playing on it.
Rob, what do you have?
If it might not be a stereo, it might be that they're watching television.
Oh.
In which case, you could possibly dig up a TV Begone.
TV Begones, yes.
Which, mm-hmm. which is the invention of a friend of the show, Mitch Altman, which can turn off TVs from great distances through windows and whatnot.
Technology can definitely be helpful here. Okay, here's another letter. Greetings from Seattle. You requested emails from listeners who were convinced to get the COVID-19 vaccine as a result of what was said on your radio program. Oh, yeah. You might not have heard this on the radio, but on Overtime, which is the show that follows us on YouTube, we had an extended conversation with one listener about the vaccine. We're not going to debate this every week, just to be clear on that. But there are people who believe that it is not safe. We happen to believe otherwise, and we think it's a very smart thing to do. But we got a number of letters on this. Anyway, this listener says I was hesitant as someone who has a mental illness bias toward indecision, experiences magical thinking, has a parent who is anti-vaccine and pro-conspiracy and pleads with family not to get vaccinated, is gender non-conforming and on hormone replacement therapy, which carries increased risk for blood clots. And that's a lot to carry when making a decision like this, when deciding the best course forward. Months ago, I had decided I wanted the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine based on a comment Alex had made during lighthearted joshing around about the merits of Pfizer versus Moderna. The decision to change my preference came as a result of the indefinite wait for the AstraZeneca vaccine to become available, but also something you said last week. The topic you broached was that of distrust. While I don't usually extend trust to major pharmaceuticals, I can make myself vulnerable enough to mistrust them. Thus, I won't expect them to have my best interest in mind, but I won't let my prejudice against them prevent me from accepting an alternative. Generally, I mistrust mass media and agenda-driven reporting. I am also resistant towards social engineering, even if it is done pro-socially. I wanted to make my decision based on scientific critique that had taken place, which required some reading from reputable research sources. And that's a very smart way to go about it. For months, I have rejected the non-scientific arguments, convincing as they may be, which always come up in discourse. I wanted to make the decision for myself and not because of what others were trying to achieve with their calls to action and inaction. I wrote all the above once and lost the draft due to a reboot. And we've all been there. I had shortened it to be able to be read on the air, but it's all gone. I have no expectation for it to be unmodified. If you do present it, well, so far every word has been said, so be surprised. I'm also writing to seek your guidance and opinions regarding the upcoming Pacifica election. Oh, yes, we have had a number of letters about that. Here's the thing. We can't tell you how to vote. We cannot say how you need to vote on these important bylaws that are coming up this month as a listener. We can, however, point you towards websites. We can encourage you to read both sides and listen to the dialogue that is taking place in many different forums. Rob, I believe you have a link to the actual bylaws themselves, which does not take one side or another. Is that correct?
That is correct. I got to just find it here. Yes, we have our station actually has a page up at, and if you would like to write this down, it's not complex. It's at www.wbai.org/bylawsvote.html. That's /bylawsvote.html, and it's a short page. I can read it out on the air. Actually, there's just one paragraph here.
There's a link. Okay.
But this is what it says. A proposed new set of bylaws is available for member review. Click here to access document, and you can click there to access the document. The proposed bylaws would change how the Pacifica National Board is elected, providing for nationwide elections every 3 years, terminate the current PNB, install 4 transition officers in its place for 3 years, and change the duties and powers of the local station boards, which would no longer elect the PNB members. The Pacifica membership will be voting yes or no on the proposed amended bylaws for 30 days, beginning June 7th. Your membership must be current as of April 7th, 2021, in order to be eligible to vote in this bylaws referendum. And yes, there's the link on that page, which is, again, www.wbai.org/bylawsvote.html, all in lowercase. And yeah, you can get the actual proposal that's there, that is up for debate here, and you can read it through yourself, and you can form your own opinions, you can find things to do searches about, to see what other people think about them. We are totally not allowed to tell you to vote one way or the other, but we can tell you, in the hacker spirit of this program, to get all the data you can and come to your own thoughts and decisions about it. And then if you can vote in this, vote with your conscience.
Okay. And Lily finishes this letter by saying, thank you for the on-air show and overtime last week. You helped to sort out my stalemate, and that's great to hear. One more letter from Edward. I heard you talking about vaccine appointments and such on last week's Off the Hook. Yesterday, I walked into Grand Central Terminal at 10:30 a.m. and got my Johnson & Johnson vaccination in literally 6 minutes. The 15-minute waiting period afterwards was the longest part of it. Side note, I cycle pretty much everywhere, and there was a person working at the Grand Central Station site who took the extra time to place my bike in a place where it was safe while I did the procedure, and that's pretty awesome. You're absolutely right. There's zero reason to not get the shot unless you have very clearly defined medical reasons not to do so. As for religious exceptions, I'm not going to go there because I get angry because of the stupidity that comes out when religion is involved. But I will say this. Screw those people. Cut them out of activities, places, and jobs. Their imaginary friend telling them the vaccines are bad is just pure, unadulterated, no question needed word I cannot say. Keep up the good work. I listen to both Off the Hook and Off the Wall. Thank you, Edward, for that letter. And yeah, you know, you don't have to be as strongly anti-religious to hold this viewpoint that, you know, it's the right thing to do. And I think there are plenty of religions out there that do encourage people to do something that that makes sense. And many times that is the guiding hand you need to get to a good place. Not always, but many times. Have you guys gotten the Excelsior Pass? This is what you get in New York when you get the vaccine. It's a QR code that you can have on your phone. You can use it to get into various places that require vaccines. I'll say right now, and you don't have to answer because some people feel it's a privacy invasion. I'm kind of curious as to how, but we don't have to talk about that. I have it. Kyle has it as well. What, do you guys have any feelings on this? Oh, you're showing it to me. Well, you don't have to do that.
Wow. They both just flashed it over the video link.
Rob and Gila have both shown me their passes, and Alex is meeting me with a cold, stony stare.
He's shaking his head no.
Does that mean you don't approve of this?
He refuses.
No, I don't have one. I don't understand the process myself either, and I got vaccinated in Pennsylvania. So I'm wondering.
Oh, well, much like getting a blue check, you need to be part of a pre-existing group of cool people, namely New Yorkers. Don't get another shot in New York. There might be a way to do it. There might be a way to expand it. But what do you think about the privacy implications? Because I don't understand the objection to it where people are saying having this is a violation of my privacy. It's not a tracking anything about you other than saying you have this, you verify that you have it, much like a license you show to somebody to get into a place. Gila, go ahead.
Right. I mean, I think that people objecting to the Excelsior Pass or the equivalent in other states, you know, they're saying it's a HIPAA violation. It's the same way as people saying if they are, if they're stopped from saying something, say, on a social media network, that it's a First Amendment violation. Like, no, if you don't understand the thing you're trying to say is being violated, don't talk about it. But I think that, no, it's, we tried scanning the QR codes just to see if there was any PII in it,
mm-hmm.
and it's not. It's literally nothing.
We're going to have to continue this conversation on Overtime. Please, folks, join us on Overtime, our YouTube channel, Channel 2600, or go to 2600.com and follow the link at the top of the page. We'll meet you there at 8 o'clock. You can call us. We're not going to debate COVID vaccines, so don't try doing that. Also tomorrow, we're making an announcement concerning both 2600 meetings and the future of the HOPE conferences. So please check 2600.com, hope.net throughout the day tomorrow for more updates on that. We'll see you next week. Good night.
High on hope and dreaming of this guy. Knows he's on his own. Always in the right places. Got all the contacts, knows the latest face.